Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today is Debbie G of Spirituality Gone Wild. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. And we are now live, except that it's without Debbie because Debbie is actually on the road again. This is a busy, busy woman. She's off doing a thousand things, but as usual, she also found somebody to sit in, and his name is Steve Weber. Coming in, I mean, this literally, we were just making the joke off the show about how this is like the pinch hitter coming in the ninth inning after he's been sitting on the bench for eight innings. That's what, that must be what it feels like. But not only that, you're doing it in a uniform you've never been in before.
No, I didn't even know I was on the team.
How about that? You got called up 5 minutes ago.
That's right. You know, you join a team and then it's like, here, kid, here's a bat. Get up there.
Right, go.
Hopefully you're not throwing fastballs, nothing but fastballs to begin with. So.
Oh, I'll throw you slow pitch. We'll play this like slow pitch softball. We'll make it really, really easy for you. Yeah, no problem at all. So, well, thank you for being a last minute pinch hitter. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I've known you from a distance. I've seen you on multiple panel shows, and I know that you've been doing the LOA Today on Spirituality Gone Wild for the last
for a few weeks,
and yeah. I've been doing a broadcast in the morning, the American Gumption Morning Show, since August of last year. So I started out doing 5 days a week, and then at the beginning of the year I said if I do 4 days a week on average, that's still plenty. So I did 162 shows to date. So I've been
very good.
Yeah.
Wow, hey, that's what it takes to just build the thing up. That's fabulous that you're doing it that much. I understand completely what it's like because I've been doing this podcast since September of 2012, and I've been doing it daily since November of 2016. So yeah, wow. I know what it's like.
Wow. I don't know what that's like. You do know what I'm.
Well, then I'll tell you about it. This is very simple. This is not a difficult thing at all. No, actually, it's great, to be perfectly honest. And I talk about it a lot, actually, on the show. How, I mean, I reached a point after doing it weekly for a few years that weekly wasn't enough. I mean, I became so addicted to doing this kind of thing. I just had to have it daily. And fortunately, I've been able to find a nice crew of co-hosts to fill me in for 5 days a week. So, cause I'm not all that great just talking to a mic. I mean, I need to be talking to a real person, but talking to a real person, I love it. I mean, this is my energy for the day. Plus I'm giving out energy. That's why we call it your daily dose of happy, but.
Yeah, no, yeah. I get what you're saying about the showing up and doing it on a day in and day out basis.
Right.
And now it's a muscle. And initially it felt overwhelming, but then I kind of got to a point where, it was, you get like a nice momentum and a nice, routine going. And, so anyway, yes, I love it. I love
it. Well, it's like being addicted to something, but without 6 months of rehab.
Exactly.
That's really what it is. So let's do a little get to know you, get to know me. Like I said, I started this podcast about 8.5 years ago, and I've been loving it. This has been my way to learn law of attraction all along the way. And as a result, I've gotten pretty good at it, which is a good thing. You listen to enough experts over the years, you kind of get good at it. But I'm curious to know, how did you get into all this stuff? When did you first get exposed to law of attraction and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I used to say my year of transition occurred or transformation occurred in 2009, and I ended up getting involved and now I'm redefining it and saying that was my first year of awakening because I've transformed every year since then. But I, that was like the first big kind of awakening. And that was the point where I went, oh my gosh, the way that I had lived my life for the first 50 years no longer was working. And so I needed to try some different things I became, full blown in that first year. And I became a fan of Abraham at that time, but then I ended up, disconnecting from Abraham for about an 8 year period. And it was only, maybe 3 years ago when I kind of like relaunched back into it. And since then, I've really doubled and tripled down on law of attraction and understanding it and really putting it the work for me. And what was funny about I was just thinking about this in preparation. you know, I was like, well, what happened to Jerry? And I didn't, yeah. know. I lost. And so I had to go back and like read, like when he, you know, I missed that whole the part. And so anyway, you know, I really do, appreciate it. And I since have become, like I said, a big fan of Law of Attraction, not just Abraham, but you know, and I just know it works and I'm putting it in place and practicing it daily in my own life.
Which is the way to do it. Absolutely. I'm curious though. You said you were exposed to Abraham. You listened for a bit and then you went away. What made you go away?
Oh, I was stuck in my head.
Well, I think that was the obvious part. The question is, how'd you get stuck? I mean, everybody gets stuck in a different way, but yeah, if you're going away from it, it means that something didn't quite resonate properly and you were focusing on stuff that wasn't working to your advantage. So you weren't getting the results you were looking for. I mean, that's the way that story normally goes, but what was your particular story is what I'm wondering.
Well, I mean, I had been from the big monster stories that occurred early in my life were two, one in my early teens and one in my, early, you know, 20s where, but the one in my early 20s specifically was, the delusions of grandeur story. And I was told by a boss that I was suffering from delusions of grandeur.
And I became
like a dot my I's and cross my T's kind of guy. And I stopped trusting my instinct at that point. And I could only, like, I didn't like consciously do that at the time, but that was the result of that, like, ill-advised, feedback I received from my boss at the time. And,
well, the feedback wasn't bad. It was listening to it that wasn't so good, but.
Yeah. So, when I finally kind of awakened to that, I mean, that was like the, and I didn't really even realize it until like, so 2009, I became aware of it, but it didn't all sink in and I didn't understand that I had been living my life with like an access to my instinct, but I would only use it to like, tune into something and then I would go into like the thinking about it prior. And so I would start overanalyzing everything. And so probably, I was exposed to Abraham and, but I hadn't kind of awakened to it yet. And I just, you know, kind of, it just sort of went by the wayside. And, and so anyway, you know, then suddenly you get reawakened or reintroduced to it. And suddenly it's like, oh my gosh. And boy, I'm doubling and tripling down these days and, you know, listening to it. And it's funny as you listen to, and I don't know how it all became. I don't know how Abraham, you know, allows people to create the content, but it's always in that 15-minute segments and little blocks and they add these nice little visuals over top of it. And again, I don't understand quite how that all works, but obviously there's some kind of a formula and I love it because, you know, you hear like, it's just enough to listen in one time and you kind of, you know, you get like a nice refresher and I listen at night or like early in the morning. Usually I don't listen too much during the day once I get into my routine, but those when I find, you know, sometimes getting up in the morning and going into the bathroom and showering, you know, you come in and you keep listening to a little bit of it. So I might listen to two or three as I kind of first wake up. But what I'm noticing today, Walt, is that like things that I have heard and like been now a student of for the last couple of years, like the deeper meaning keeps coming out, you know, and you hear it like over again. And at the beginning, you know, you need to like get the big picture, but as you listen more and more and you practice it and you get better at it, you know, then you can kind of go deeper. And so sometimes you hear the same kind of a thing you go, oh, I remember hearing this a couple of years ago, and then you go, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I didn't hear that the first time around. So,
but that's true for a lot of the literature. I mean, look, I think one reason I brought up the question was I wanted to get into what I call the woo-woo factor, because I know for myself, going back to long before I heard about the term Law of Attraction, before The Secret came out and all that, I mean, I was aware of like the Napoleon Hills of the world, Tony Robbins, you know, W. Clement Stone, all these teachers from, you know, the bygone era, so to speak. And I liked it, but I didn't believe it. If you know what I mean, because of the woo-woo factor, the factor that says, well, this stuff just kind of happens. The universe makes things happen. And that's when my rational brain kicked in and said, yeah, that's not the way stuff works. We live in a rational world. Didn't you know that? You guys haven't gotten the program. So, you know, obviously I was the one who didn't get the program, but that's what kept me away from it for the longest time. I like the messaging in general. I like the positive aspect of it, but I couldn't find any way to make it work in my life. I couldn't find any way to understand it in a way that made sense to me. And so I just kind of dismissed it over time, many times, regularly. And then finally, The Secret comes along. And by that time, The Secret came along for me at a time that was perfect. They talk about perfect timing. That was perfect timing for me because I was pretty much at one of the lowest points in my life. And I was ready to hear almost anything, no matter how woo-woo it might have been. And that was plenty woo-woo. There was a lot of woo going on in that one. But I was willing to listen to it. And it started to resonate. It started to, you know, okay, well, I can kind of see that. Still sounds a little bit crazy, but I like the results anyway. They're talking about some good results. I like that. And so I started to pay a little more attention, tried a few experiments. Didn't even hear about Abraham. I didn't know that Abraham was the original inspiration from Rhonda Byrne to create The Secret, that, you know, it was her experience with the Abraham workshops. I didn't hear about Abraham until just before I started doing this podcast, really, back in 2011, 2012. But between 2007, I first got exposed to the movie in 2007 and 2012, I just kept asking more and more questions. And the only drawback was, it's not like it was today. Today, you got all the social media. You got the YouTube, the Facebook, the LinkedIn, you know, the Instagram. You got all that stuff you can go to get all the information. Then it was like, well, you got to buy the books. Where do you buy the books? I don't know. Maybe a bookstore. I couldn't find any of this stuff. So, and anything I could find was like workshops I couldn't afford at the time because I was so deeply down in the dumps. So I was just trying to piece it together. Just trying to make sense out of it. And I think that actually is what sustained me through the woo, through the stuff that I didn't buy into. Cause I figured, well, if I just keep asking enough questions, maybe I'll find some answers somewhere. And I did, just not the way that most people do it today. That's all.
I didn't, you know, it's funny listening to you. I was also a student of all of was it Success Magazine in my 20s. Yeah. And I had the cassette tapes and so, all of the people that you talked about, Zig Ziglar and
Zig Ziglar,
you know, the Acres of Diamonds guy, whoever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I had all these cassette tapes and I listened to them all through my 20s. And so I'm 62 now. So this is, you know, this is like in the 80s, I'm listening to it. Right. But I didn't think of it as woo so much then. I just thought of it like as, you know, gee, it's like a mindset kind of a thing. And again, I had like, this was the time when I was like doubling down on my mind kind of my phase where I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to just think everything through. And instinct is good, but instinct's just like a hint. You know, you got to like then like analyze it and become analytical about it. So, you know, so I went through that whole phase and then I don't know what happened, but, The Secret, it's funny you mentioned The Secret. I heard about it and I was at a point where like I was kind of like not doing what everybody was doing. So when I heard about The Secret, I never went and saw it, never even heard about it and didn't become very familiar with it. And so it was more like by accident that I ended up discovering it and then retroactively went back and learned what The Secret was all about. And, what really was the trigger for me in kind of the last couple of years is I had decided I was going to go do the American Gumption Project. And, you know, there's a backstory, but 3 years ago, I said, I'm going to go, or 2 years ago, I really said, I'm going to go out and travel the country, live and work in an RV. And I'm going to, going to be called American Gumption. And I'm going to find good stories because everything I'm hearing on the news has nothing to do with my life and it has nothing to do with any of the people that I'm interacting with. And so I thought there has to be an audience for people who want to hear positive, good stories. And so American Gumption was born and it was like, okay, that's what we're going to do. Well, you know, until you actually get rid of everything, I was living in Montana and go out there. Well, I told a friend about what I was planning to do. And she said, oh, you're going to do exactly what Lilou Mace is doing. And I said, who is Lilu Mace? And she said, oh, well, you know, look her up. And so I did. And what happened was the very first person I saw her interview was, Dr. Joe Dispenza. And I had become familiar with Dr. Joe's work, like back in that 2012 timeframe. But again, at the same time, that was like, it was probably from that that I ended up becoming familiar with Abraham. And then for whatever reason, it kind of like, you know, went off the, you know, I stopped paying attention to it. Well, Lilu Mace reintroduced me to Dr. Joe, and I went, oh my gosh, I liked this guy like several years ago, but where, you know, why did I lose track with him? And I don't know. That was really what started the rebirth of all of the law of attraction for me. So it's kind of a weird, you know, and I'm not only piecing this together now as you're, you know, as we're talking, because it's like, well, how did this all happen for
me? Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And interesting you mentioned Dr. Joe, because that hints at the idea that a big, I won't call it a block, I'll call it like a milestone. A big milestone for you had to involve health issues in some way, because Dr. Joe is all about health. It's all about, you know, turning health around if your health isn't good, or understanding how you have the power of the mind over the body and that kind of thing, which is cool. I mean, it's one of the topics we explore here on the show, but it's also something that I have a little personal experience with. So I'm curious, what health stuff have you been dealing with, particularly around that particular time?
You know, I didn't have a specific health issue other than just, you know, when I turned 55, I realized that I was no longer young, and you know, my knees hurt. And
the hill looks different from that side, doesn't it?
I always thought of myself as young. I was living a law of attraction life, unbeknownst to me, up until I was 55, where I'm like, hey, I'm just young, you know. Then all of a sudden, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm no longer young. I didn't call myself old. I just said I'm no longer young. So I didn't have a specific health challenge, but I just became fascinated by, you know, when I was reintroduced to him and his story. And I just knew that the mind is, you know, very, very powerful. And so when he talked about his story, I thought, oh my gosh, we can change things. We, you know, we have the, you know, the placebo book just impacted me, like, you know, and I always knew, like, I instinctively, when I heard this, like, I just knew that, like, you know, we used to kind of laugh about, you know, in the, like, kind of like in the family in terms of where people that I grew up with, it was like, oh, you know, this is crazy. Like, you know, some pill could actually, you know, make you better. And then once Dr. Joe explained all of it, the way it works, it just made perfect sense. And I just doubled down and tripled down on like learning and understanding it. So I kind of come at it from a, you know, I like the science perspective. I like the, yeah, I too. Like the quantum. You know, I'm a big fan of the quantum. And so, you know, that makes a little more sense than the spiritual, you know, the religious, certainly the religious thing. I like the spiritual part of it, but I kind of like the connection of you know, science and spirituality together. And that's the approach that I'm kind of taking with it, trying to understand it and rationalize it and explain it and make it work.
I'm with you on that. I like marrying the two as much as possible too. I like following the positive psychology movement. I like following the work of Dr. Joe or Dr. Bruce Lipton or, you know, some of the others who are doing the really cutting edge stuff where medical research and science research are concerned. And I like seeing, well, not only because, you know, the Dr. Joes and the Dr. Bruces, they're like way out on the leading edge. You know, they're like so far away from the mainstream. The mainstream is saying, I'm not sure they're part of us, but the fact is they are doing science. And they are taking it into realms that most medical and science people aren't ready to go to. But right. even if you look at the people who are in the mainstream, where they're at is a lot more limited, obviously, because they're just not willing to branch out that far. But it's interesting to see how far they have gotten, even compared to, say, 10 to 20 years ago. I love following, for instance, placebo and nocebo research. I mean, right now, it's still pretty much in the stage for most researchers that, you know, they'll apply it to pain situations. And they do a lot of research on, you know, what is the placebo effect where pain is concerned? What is the nocebo effect where pain is concerned? They don't really want to get into, is this creating disease? Am I curing disease? They don't want to go there yet. But you can kind of see that they're like touching it. They're like tickling it with a feather just to see, well, do I want to go that way? No, I'm not ready yet. You know, you can just see that happening right now. And I didn't expect to see that in my lifetime. I thought, you know, we're about the same age. I'm about a year older than you. I thought when I was in my teens and 20s that it would always be the rational science circle. And we have gone so far outside of that rational science circle, thank you, Albert Einstein, that it's almost unrecognizable now. Still has a long way to go from a spiritual point of view, but my goodness, they've made a lot of progress. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, when and yes, Einstein and physics and the whole, you know, this is kind of a weird story, but I remember reading a book on Einstein in my 20s at that same time I'm listening to it, and I didn't understand hardly any of it, but I just found the man fascinating. And so I've always had this interest in it. And I, you know, one of the books that's, you know, that I read just a year ago was about, quantum explained. And it was about the, you know, Niels Bohr and that whole thing. And, and then you get, you hear Dr. Joe talking about like, well, what happens once you go past the speed of sound? And that's where the quantum seems to be, you know, connecting everything. And it's like, I don't know, instinctively, I'm like just fascinated by it and interested in believing that, you know, well, in 2014, I had this, I was doing a lot of, again, I was doing it all from the head, trying to like, you know, analyze everything. And I ended up going through this exercise of about 6 months where I had to write down what my beliefs were, my core beliefs. And I came up with six, of which four of them, I don't remember what they are. but the two that I do remember are we're all connected and there are no coincidences. And this became a foundational belief. And I just somehow knew it. And the other ones were just such, you know, like tripe kind of like simple beliefs that like, oh, though, you know, the sun rises in the east. I don't know. It wasn't that, but it was, it didn't make any difference. But the idea that we're all connected and there are no coincidences just was, you know, from the work I had been doing, it just resonated. And to this very day, that's really, you know, the foundation of what I'm trying to, you know, build my, you know, my, whatever it is I'm doing here.
Well, your knowledge base, let's call it that. It's a knowledge base that you're building up. One of the most fascinating things about Albert Einstein, from my perspective, is the question that he raised. And this is a question that appears a lot in LOA circles. Is the universe friendly? Do you believe that you live in a friendly universe? And I remember my reaction the first time I heard that, long before LOA, my first reaction was, what is a physicist asking that question for? It seems so far outside, because it was completely outside the range of what physics had always studied. He's asking, is the universe friendly? I mean, he's basically applying a personality to the universe. That's what he's doing, you know? And it was kind of mind blowing. You're right. I mean, it was hard to understand a lot of the stuff that I'm actually pretty good at figuring this stuff out. And I still only had a very halfway understanding of how the whole thing worked. Even now, I kind of buy into the Niels Bohr theory, which is that anyone who thinks that they really understand quantum physics has thereby demonstrated that they really don't understand quantum physics, because nobody understands it.
Right. The one thing about Einstein that was great is you see the pictures of him, and the dude was like just having fun most of
the time.
He was playful. Yeah. And you didn't see any of the other, you don't see any of the other old physicists and scientists like being playful like that. And so that's why he resonated with me, because the guy was just like, you know, he was having fun. And really ultimately that's what, LOA is all about, having fun, right?
It is.
It's about joy. It's about keeping your vibration up high. And Einstein lived his life that way. So I think, I come down more on the side of Bordeaux. I mean, Einstein, you know, opened up the can of worms, like the E equals MC squared. But then, you know, Einstein fought, you know, Bohr and that whole idea, you know, for the rest of his life, and not believing that, you know, the quantum was somehow different than what the physical reality was. So,
well, he knew that that's what his formula said. He just didn't believe his formula. That was his problem. Seriously, he said, this can't be right. I must have made a mistake somewhere, because this conclusion is just impossible. And that's what the basis of the fight was. Whereas Niels Bohr was saying, no, you're right, Albert. You trust it. Trust your result.
Right. And so you get to the speed of light, and then it all just sort of goes crazy. You know, his formula works up, you know, explains the physical up until the speed of light. But then, you know, anyway, so it's just I'm not enough of an expert that I feel like I can talk about it, but I do like it and I do watch it. And about a year ago, Walt, I ended up like discovering the, something in England, like the, there's a group over there with all the scientists talking. So I ended up listening to a whole bunch of, you know, like quantum physicists that try to explain stuff. And, it's really quite, you know, I find it fascinating, but it's funny because they talk about certain things up until a certain point, and then they have to, you know, like put their science hat on and they won't go any further. And it's like, I'm like, hey guys, come on, man, you're right there at the edge.
Well, they're checking their union card to make sure that, you know, they haven't been kicked out of the scientists union because they don't want to lose that credential, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. There's social pressure in science circles. People don't necessarily realize that, but there is huge pressure to conform to what traditional science has always said. So you start straying from that and you're kind of looking over your shoulder like, okay, are they going to attack me? That's what these guys are dealing with, you know, so I'm sympathetic to them. I'm glad that they're doing it. I'm glad that they're pushing the boundaries, but it's a little scary for them. They keep double checking and rechecking their results to make sure, yeah, I really got this interpretation right, because they can get shot down pretty quick in their own circle. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
But funny thing you mentioned also about Albert Einstein being a fun loving guy. I can't remember what the name of the movie was, but it was, he was portrayed by, Walter Matthau. Do you remember that one?
I don't.
Great movie. Tim Robbins was his nephew, and there were like three or four other famous physicists from that era who were all hanging out with Albert, and they're basically teaming up together to try to figure out how to get Tim Robbins a girlfriend. Well, the girlfriend is actually who's the actress? I can't remember what her name is. She played. I'm drawing a blank. She played in Sleepless in Seattle and.
Oh, Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan, yes. And she is actually, if I remember correctly, she is actually the niece of Albert Einstein in the movie. Oh. And they're trying to hook Tim Robbins up because Tim is an auto mechanic who has fallen for the niece, but she's far too smart for him. So the scientists all get together, kind of feed him stuff to try to make him look smart so that the two of them can hook up together. So this is how these famous physicists in the movie are basically getting their joy in life, trying to get these two young people hooked up and into a romantic relationship. Not at all what you would expect from a bunch of physicists, but it's a fun movie. And it's about the only movie I've ever seen with Walter Matthau on it, where Matthau was having a great time. He wasn't the curmudgeon. Pretty interesting.
But yeah.
Yeah. Good movie. I can't remember what the name of that movie was, but it was really good. It came out about 20 years ago. But yeah, check that one out. But the having fun aspect, the idea of having fun, I mean, I'm glad that Albert was doing it, but that's what we do here all the time. We're constantly looking for ways to raise our vibration, to get into good space, to help our listeners get into a vibration that's a higher one on a regular basis. Lately, we've been doing experiments. On the Tuesday show, we've been doing psychic experiments. On the Wednesday show, we've been doing some basic LOA experiments drawn from the books of Pam Grout. I don't know if you're familiar with those books, the E squared and EQ books.
Yeah.
Having a lot of fun with those, having some really good success too. And getting our listeners to participate in them as well. And just we're basically trying to push the boundaries of, you know, how far can we do this? How much can we get people involved in doing it? And how much can we as a group raise our vibration while we're doing it? So that's LOA today in a nutshell. And that there's nothing more to be said about it.
You've been doing the show, but you, and Spirituality Gone Wild is, you know, you started additionally broadcasting it as part of this channel. I mean, how did that come about?
That came about, actually, the best conduit that was involved in all this was Daniel Mangana. He's on the show with me on Thursdays, him and Alex King. And Daniel introduced me to a number of people, including David Strickle, including Debbie G, and a variety of others. And that introduction to Debbie G led to her being on this show. I got onto her show back last October, November, something like that. And then I had an opening on the Friday podcast, reached out to her to see if she'd want to do it regularly. She said, sure. And so we did a couple shows, and we started talking about how to kind of merge our networks together. So that's where that's been coming from. And you know, it's still in its infancy. It's still, you know, in the early days, but already it's looking pretty exciting. I mean, here we are. I mean, I wasn't even using StreamYard before. StreamYard happened because of the connection with Debbie G. I was using Zoom before. And I mean, StreamYard has its limitations, but I'm liking it. And I'm liking the fact that we're reaching more people this way. So there's one thing that came out of it.
Where were you broadcasting before? Both Facebook and YouTube, or?
I did Facebook alone to one particular location because Zoom at that point was only doing one. I think they're still only doing one at a time.
Right.
And then, I started doing it to my YouTube channel for a while after that, and then hooked in with, Debbie here on the StreamYard. But I mean, it was fine because our audience, like 99% of our audience is podcast. You know, the number of people who are actually listening through the social media or through the YouTubes or whatever is a small percentage of the overall audience. So it was fine. It didn't really matter a whole lot. The podcast audience just got it through the podcast, whatever app that they use to listen to it. But, when I began to realize the potential for reaching a larger audience through StreamYard, that's when I got, you know, my antenna went up saying, oh, this is good stuff. I like this. All right. Let's do this. Do some more of this. So yeah, that's what brought that about. And I mean, the funny part is now, like I said, Debbie came on as a co-host. This is about a month ago. And then she's been going nuts with this whole routine in Arizona, which she hasn't been able to tell much of the story about yet because she hasn't been on enough lately.
Right.
But there's a whole huge story that's building up there involving, you know, some pretty large players, really, really large players. And I mean, I don't feel like I'm in a point in a place where I can actually tell the story for her. I'm waiting for her to come back to tell the story, but it's going to be pretty massive from everything she's been telling us, right?
I mean, and I'm in the same boat. I don't know, really the whole story because,
anybody does because she can't take the time to tell anybody. She actually tried to get me on the phone one time to tell me the story and literally the phone call went like this. Well, it's so exciting. I met this guy. I'm doing this. And we went and that's the way the conversation went. She couldn't complete a sentence. She was so excited. She got two or three words out at a time and then jumped to the next sentence before she could even complete it. So, you know, I kind of pieced it together from those two or three, you know, incomplete sentences, but she's like flipping out in terms of how high she's flying right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's there's crazy. Good things coming. There's good things, new things.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the way the universe works.
That's right. So I have a law of attraction story about Debbie G that I can share with you.
Sure, bring it on.
Hear it.
Yeah, bring it on. Tell us about it.
It's a little gossipy. Is that okay?
I don't think Debbie minds anything at all about gossip, so go for it. I could be wrong. Maybe she'll come back and surprise me, but I don't think so.
So in 2019, July 7th, my birthday, I created a landing page and I announced American Gumption and I said, I'm going to go out and travel around and I'm going to, you know, leave Montana and I'm going to go back out into the world and I'm going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So this was the story that I announced and I just had a landing page attached to my speakinggump.com website. So, okay. So at that point, I for a full year, I had the landing page as kind of the only thing that was what American Gumption was going to be.
Sure.
And, so then now we're in 2020 and I go like out to do a little dry run in an RV for 2 weeks, out in Washington and Oregon. And what happened in March of 2020, right in the middle of my 2 week trip, the country shuts down.
Right.
And so I finished the, you know, so the project I was working on, you know, disbanded. People went home and I had like 8 days left with the RV and I'm like, well, I just drove around and, you know, I hung out there and I went and I realized that I didn't have the technology and I didn't have the ability to broadcast from the road. And so I came back and I thought I really do need to define American Gumption a lot better. So the next couple of months, April, May, June, I'm busy putting together the website, AmericanGumption.com. And I launch it again on July 7th on my birthday because everybody on Facebook sends you birthday messages, people you don't know. And I go, oh, thank you very much for your message. Here is what I'm up to.
Right.
You
know, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's a good timing. So I had this deadline. So, I'm also a single guy. I've never married. I'm on Tinder and I, somehow or another, I end up coming across Debbie G's profile on Tinder. And I look and I'm like, she's an attractive woman, but I realize she's like got a show promo on her Tinder page. And I could look at like the guy's name who she was interviewing was like, his name was on there. So I look up his Facebook profile. I find him. I then look at his friends and I find Debbie and I message her. And this is on on my birthday on July 7th, the day I launched the website. It's like
nice.
11 o'clock at night. And I instantly strike up a conversation with Debbie. And within 3 days, she invited me to have my own show. I never got to be a guest on her show. She never invited. I just wanted a guest appearance on her show. I didn't want a date. But anyway, I got a show out of the deal. So that's how I ended up joining Spirituality Gone Wild. Now, American Gumption wasn't necessarily focused on, I mean, I was on my own spiritual journey and awakening, but I didn't feel like a teacher or, you know, I just felt like a student. And so Debbie said, hey, it's Spirituality Gone Wild. You can do whatever you want. And I went, well, I want it to be a variety show. I want it to be kind of like, you know, I want to interview different people who are essentially different spiritual leaders, because I want to be the student and I want to make, you know, help them shine. And, you know, and the tagline is ordinary individuals living extraordinary lives. And those are the people I like to interview. But anyway, that's the story of how I met Debbie G. I, you know, met her on the hookup site Tinder, except that we've never hooked up.
Well, you got a different kind of hookup is what you got.
But I got a broadcasting gig out of the deal. So yeah, so it's
exactly.
been great.
That's
and then cool. last month, I ended up driving across the country. I flew out to California. A car needed to be transported back from the West Coast to the East Coast. And I'm living just north of Philadelphia temporarily. And I raised my hand and I said, hey, I'm ready for an adventure. So I took the show on the road, kind of another little dry run in terms of practicing and, you know, meeting people. And I met a lot of the other co-creators on Spirituality Gone Wild. And I got to meet Debbie G and her son Christopher down in Huntington Beach. And they were getting ready to go do this thing in Arizona, which we still haven't heard the full story on, but
except in choppy half sentences, but other than that, yeah.
But meeting people, so here's the moral of the story is meeting people face to face, Walt, is better than meeting them on Zoom. So Zoom is good, but face to face is better.
Face to face is better. Okay, all right.
Is better. So Zoom is very good, but face to face is better.
Well, I think most people wouldn't have even gotten through this whole last year if it hadn't been for Zoom and
Absolutely.
StreamYard and all the others. That made a huge difference in a lot of people's lives. So I have nothing but good to say about all of that. But I agree with you. I think the in-person stuff is important. Where are you planning to go then? I mean, are you planning to make this a permanent road show? What are you hoping to do?
Yeah. So the idea is, the original idea was that I didn't have it figured out. So it's morphed and it's gotten a little more defined since then. But the original idea was that I would just, you know, meet people and interview them. And I wasn't sure exactly, you know, how I would meet them other than the fact that I was willing to just get out there and do it. So when the opportunity to start a broadcast virtually came up, it became the American Gumption Morning Show. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that, and that's actually allowed me to kind of, you know, define a little bit better what kind of conversations I like to have in terms of, you know, who the guest should be and what kind of things are fun for me to talk about and what kind of an audience I want to build. So now it's morphed into, it will go back out on the road. There'll be some kind of a version of a regular broadcast that'll be more informal like this, except that hopefully I'll have like a little studio in my RV and these things could be like more of a live spontaneous show.
Yeah, sure.
But then the other part of it is that I imagine a produced, you know, interview, kind of like let's call it like a 60-minute style where you actually, you know, you sit down and you interview people and you go through their story a little bit in a condensed way, a lot of editing kind of a thing. And, Charles Kuralt had that 25-year run, across America.
I remember that. Yeah.
So it's gonna be kind of maybe an updated version of what Charles Kuralt did. So that's my vision for that. And then the third option or idea would be that it could be like a bit of a virtual reality in the sense that it could have some outtakes from the two different shows I described and also some travel, you know, like, you know, as you're driving down the road, you set up the camera on the side of the RV and you do that. So anyway, so I'm kind of now moving into the phase of making that all happen. Hopefully finding some sponsors and some people that, you know, I can, production people that I can work with and making it all happen. So that's the, you know, fingers crossed, it's all going to happen this year.
You mentioned the technology side. I'm fortunate in that regard because I had a technology background, so I was able to figure a lot of it out on my own. But I'm sympathetic to you on that because that's not, I mean, it's easier than it was before. Let's be perfectly honest. You know, when I first started the podcast, God help anybody who didn't have a tech background. You were going to be basically lost. Today, there's just so many great options for anyone who wants to start a podcast or to do, you know, live streaming or anything like that. It just makes it so much easier. But, yeah, there was a time when that was just impossible. So you're kind of timing it right. You're timing it so that, you know, you are starting to enter your dream, so to speak. You're starting to live your dream at a time when the technology is right there for you. So well done in terms of the timing, perfect timing, right?
You know, and I left Montana in 2019. If I had waited one more year, it would have been like, you know, impossible to get out of there in, you know, one year later. So
true.
It was funny. There was a lot of things that didn't feel like good timing from the whole, you know, Montana, experience that I went through. And, but boy, did I time the, you know, the getting out of there at the right time. And again, I loved Montana, and it wasn't like I left because, it was, you know, it wasn't wonderful, but it was like, I had the feeling like the reason I came there and, had been in a bit of a, we'll call it like a hibernation for several years was that I needed to go through my own, you know, journey of awakening. I had to go back and examine all of my core beliefs and I was developing a motivational message at the time that opened the can of worms to my core beliefs because I didn't have that foundation solid. Mm. So, you know, you go, well, what am I going to talk about and how am I going to, you know, share with people what message I really want to share with. And it was like, oh my gosh, I had to go back to kind of, you know, square one with it. So.
Yeah. There's nothing like talking to an audience to make you really focus on what it is that you believe and really focus on what you know and really notice where the gaps are. I mean, that became the basis for me with the podcast. I would bring in, my trick was to bring in life coaches. I've had more life coaches as co-hosts than anything else. Lots of them, lots of really good ones. And it was a great way to do it because, first of all, you're learning all this fabulous stuff from people who've gone through, you know, high levels of training and they've worked with, you know, umpteen numbers of people who are looking for help in their own lives, both from a life coach aspect and from a therapist aspect, because some of them were therapists. And you're doing all of it without having to pay a therapist fee. That was even the better part. You know, so it was like, if anything that, and it took me a while to kind of do it, but I would get to the point pretty early in the process where I would notice that there was, okay, here's a hole in my understanding. Here's something I don't quite get yet. So feed that to the person I'm interviewing who has all this knowledge and information. They start feeding me all these answers. And now I'm sitting there digesting. Oh, wait a minute. I have to be part of the process. I have to actually interview here. Oh yeah. Ask the next question. Meanwhile, my mind is going crazy with all this information that's coming in here. That's the way it's been for the last 8-9 years. And it's been a wonderful way to learn. But, I totally get where you're coming from that you feel the need to have those holes filled. You feel the need to know that you're going to be able to address the needs of your listeners and make it really be helpful to your listeners and teach them things that they didn't know and help them get to that next level. And you know perfectly well, you can't get them there unless you can get there yourself. You got to be able to do it. You know, you got to walk the walk. You can't just talk the talk.
That's right.
That's the reality, you know?
Yeah.
So it's daunting. It's a good thing because it kind of gets us off the snide, so to speak. It gets us up and doing and thinking and working on ourselves. But it's also a little bit scary when you're doing it on a broadcast.
Some days I'm trying to just spotlight people who are, you know, like I love moments when people have like that awakening where they just like something changes. And if I can kind of get around that story, that seems to be the part that I like the most and, you know, shining that spotlight on others and, you know, allowing people to, you know, take inspiration from that. And then the other part of it is like where you have people who are more advanced and know a lot more and, you know, then I become this, I'm just sitting there like the student, like
the student.
One of those moments right then and there. So.
Yeah. Tell me more. Teach me more, teacher.
There's one more piece of my backstory that you may or may not know about.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the movie Forrest Gump?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, here, let me adjust this up. There we go. So there's a picture of Forrest back there and you can see Gumption.
Right.
So, So I was the Forrest Gump impersonator for the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company for 15 years.
Oh my goodness.
From 1996. So the movie came out in 1994. And then in 96, I became their impersonator and I ended up working for 15 years with them, opening 22 US locations and eight international. And so I sat on the bench and played the character for 15 years. As that was coming to an end, I ended up moving to Montana and I knew I needed to kind of, you know, like transition. What am I going to do with the next part of my life? You know, what
was the
phase of it? And so anyway, I thought, well, I'll become a speaker and I'll just use the, you know, the lessons from the movie. And then that's how Gumption got born. And I had advice from a speaking coach who said, I wanted to talk about personal responsibility, and this person told me, nobody will pay you to talk about personal responsibility. That's a terrible subject to talk about. And I was like, that's not good. Really? Okay. They're just like, talk about, sales training or, you know, this or that. And I said, I wanted to talk about personal responsibility. And they said, so I said, I know, I'll talk about gumption. And I just redefined gumption to mean
there
personal responsibility.
Yeah. Sure.
So anyway, that's how Gumption was born. And that was fine. I survived for those, 10 years when I was developing that message. Mm-hmm. But then the American Gumption Project and me going out and actually interviewing the people, because what I really loved doing was I loved when I was the character and talking to people. And so how do I talk to people? So part of the American Gumption Tour will potentially be, using themes from the movie and the character. I don't obviously own the licensing rights to it. But I was the character for 15 years. And so and now American Gumption is the brand that I see, taking it forward with. So that's going to be, there'll be a little bit of part of that, part of it. I might even dress up occasionally and sit on or have conversations on the bench, that might be a regular segment part of it. So it's still to be defined. But anyway, so that's the Gumption connection.
How interesting that you have a bench involved too. The reason I say that is when I started doing the podcast, the first 20 episodes or so were just whatever interviews I could find with mostly with life coaches or people who are kind of in that field. One of those people, he was actually on my 12th show, was a gentleman named Joel Elston. And Joel was a therapist at the time. He's now a life coach in the Richmond, Virginia area and really an amazing guy with an amazing backstory, just incredible. But he had put out a book and his book was called The Bench. Mm. And the reason it's called The Bench is this is a bench that's on Anna Maria Island off the coast of Florida. It's where he went to when he hit his lowest point in life.
Mm.
And sat on that bench, looking out on the water, trying to make sense of his life, where he was going, why he should even continue with his life. And that bench over time became the place that he kept going back to year after year after year to answer basic questions about where he wanted to go next. What was important to him? What were his goals in life? What did he want to accomplish? How did he want to overcome some pretty serious challenges that he had faced in his life and so on and so forth, and turned into a book that became a bestseller and has actually helped literally thousands and thousands of people. So when you mentioned the bench, now I know you were talking about the one associated with Forrest Gump, but I thought, wow, what's this thing about benches? Benches seems to be a recurring theme going on here.
Yeah. And maybe the video or the produced video show is really more of just a conversation on the bench that, you just have the conversation but you edit it down to that really, succinct, 20 minutes of good, turning points when people face those moments where, where life can't go on the way it's been. Something has to change. And individuals have the ability to make a decision, like a spontaneous moment decision that completely changes the course of their life. That's the kind of thing that I, really feel like I want to connect with and hear those stories and, because we all have that power, but usually we don't get there until we're at a pretty dark, place. Like our back is against the wall somehow. We don't, but what, and this is what Dr. Joe talks a lot about. What if you, you know, why do you want to wait until you have that medical crisis or you have that, you know, that low point? What if you could just turn your life around at a point where you're, and so that to me is really an interesting thing. So maybe that's what, you know, the produce thing will be like, conversations on the bench or something like that. But yeah. I'm going to look up that author in that book, and I need to have him as a guest on my show.
Yeah, sure. I'll pass along contact information. Joel actually did become a co-host here for about 4 years or so, and was a wonderful co-host. Just like I said, an amazing guy. His particular dark night of the soul situation was, he was a gambling addict. He had stolen from his father's insurance company. He got caught. He went to prison. And when they slammed the door closed, he had an amazing thing happen. He breathed a sigh of relief. Can you imagine that? You've just been thrown in prison. You don't know when you're going to get out, and you breathe a sigh of relief. Why? Because now all of the fears that he'd been building up in his mind had come to reality, and there was no more building up fears. It was already there.
It was all over. Yeah.
And it was like, it was a turning point. From that point on, his life started to improve. But that's a strange thing to say. He's in prison, for goodness sake.
Right, right.
You know, but his life started to improve, and he started meeting people who taught him about law of attraction, and he started refocusing on what he was going to do to rebuild himself. He ended up learning how to become a therapist so that he could help other gambling addicts. He ended up I'm not quite sure how he got connected originally to this, but he started getting referrals once he got into practice as a therapist from people who were mainly social workers working for the government, working with kids who were caught in the foster care system, particularly the ones who couldn't be adopted. They were adoptable. And when they couldn't figure out what to do with them, when every other therapist had given up, they said, well, give them to Joel. Maybe Joel could do something with them. And he did. He helped these kids turn their lives around. Just an amazing, amazing story. And starting, well, obviously it started before, you know, he got thrown in the pokey. But that point in time, he refers to that as something that he would never replace. He doesn't want to live it again. But it was like, in his mind, the best thing that ever happened to him, because that's where everything turned around, when he was at his lowest point. So that feeds exactly into what Dr. Joe talks about, what you're talking about, what so many other people here on the podcast have talked about. There's something about really going deep, deep, deep into that negative side of the contrast that just bounces people right out, almost like, you know, they're coming out of a chute, flying. Just because they went through that deep, deep, dark night.
And they all can look back at that moment and pinpoint the exact moment. Yes. And every, like, the momentum, like, you know, went from like one direction to another direction from that, like little hairline moment, like, and it all changed. And those are wonderful, you know, those are wonderful stories. You know, and so, but what I really like is, like, how do we take control of our lives? And of course, law of attraction is a big way of doing that, to where we, you know, put those things in practice and, you know, get that momentum going in a different direction.
So it's nice to know that it all starts in the mind, that everything starts in the mind. And I think that's one of the things I really wanted to do, to learn how all that works, to understand it deeply through what I was doing here on the podcast, but also in my own life, knowing that if I really got that, if I could really grasp that, if I could use the Robert Heinlein term, if I could really grok it, I could take this anywhere. And I do, and I did, and I'm still learning it. I think we all continue to learn, you know, throughout our lives, but having that foundational understanding of how thought becomes the basis of everything, and exploring all the different aspects of how thought truly plays out as the basis of everything, that's exciting. That's fun. That's really interesting. And it's also fun kind of tracing stuff back too. Like, for instance, you mentioned that Dr. Joe was a big thing for you. And I've told stories here about, you know, various health situations that I've used the law of attraction to overcome. My wife actually went through a big one recently. And when you go through those, when you're in the midst of them, it can be hard. It can be hard to maintain focus, particularly if there's some chronic pain involved, you know, because it's just chronic pain, and it kind of takes over the thought process. But if you can actually get to a point where you have that perspective and you say, you know what? Okay. I know this started with thought. Where were my thoughts that got me here? Because I know thought got me here in the first place, and I can't always piece it together. I can't always make that original connection, but on those occasions where I can make that original connection, boy, does that just it just clarifies in a way that no teaching, no book, no movie, no speaker, no guest on a show can possibly clarify. Making that connection to where was the original thought? It kind of like it reinforces so strongly the power of the thought, and it kind of teaches you on a very fundamental basis, you change your thought, you're going to get a different result.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have somebody explain it to you anymore because you know it. You know it viscerally. You know it at your core of your being because you were there. That's the fun part.
The thing that seems to be coming up right at the moment in my own journey into law of attraction is the idea of like really paying attention to everything that I think and speak. There was a good number of years where I lived in like a lot of regret and like, and I can now look back at that time and see that I was perpetuating all of those things, but I was trying to go through and analyze and understand it, and it just wouldn't go away. As I've really ultimately left Montana and I got rid of, there was energy that was just there that was holding me stuck.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And it wasn't like bad and evil, but it was just no longer serving me. And so I finally, you know, removed myself from it. Once I removed myself from it, clarity about where I was to go next in my life started showing up. And one day I realized, I used to think as soon as I can figure this out, I'll know what to do next. And I was just in that like kind of perpetual, like couple year period of like feeling like stuck and not sure, you know, do I go this direction? What? And so anyway, listening to Abraham this last couple of weeks, it's just, I'm hearing over and over and over again, the idea that, don't talk about, and her guest, you know, the guest that she's interviewing, they mention what they don't want. And she's like, don't do that. And I'm hearing it. And so I'm really trying to focus on in terms of me getting out there and making this show, let's not talk about any of the things that are the challenges. Let's just talk about where the direction that I want to go is and what do I want to happen and who do I want to serve when I'm out there and how does it look like when I'm serving these people as opposed to, you know, the specific challenges of making it all happen. I can't start until this piece falls into place. No, there's a lot of pieces that need to fall into place, but trusting that they are going to, and then allowing, you know, the art of allowing, that was something that I really was focused on for a few months before that, you know, just allowing things to come into my life. And this is today's a perfect example, right? Debbie calls and says, hey, Steve, we need you to pinch hit here, come into the game. And then we hadn't met and, it was a perfect opportunity. Obviously if I wasn't available, it wouldn't have worked, but I was, and I went, okay, great. Here we are. Let's go.
It was perfect timing is what it was. I'm glad that you were willing to, take the bait. That was great.
There are no coincidences. We are all connected, Walt.
Or to put it another way, everything is a coincidence, but there's no such thing as a mere coincidence. Everything is connected. That's what all coincidence means is that two things happen at the same time.
Exactly.
People have come to conclude that, well, if it's a coincidence and they happen at the same time, that means they're not connected. That's where the mistake is. It's right. Thinking that they're not connected. They're all connected.
Everything's connected. Right. Everything's connected.
Which is a little bit scary, but nevertheless, it's the truth. It's the reality.
Yeah. Well, if you take the law of attraction and you break it down to, it's just the fact that everything, it would not work. If everything was not connected, it would not work.
It would fall apart really quickly. No doubt
about
it.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you very much for taking the time and doing the pinch hitting. I think you hit at least a double, probably a home run. I mean, you did pretty well here. So let's put it this way. You didn't make an out. You didn't strike out. That was the most important.
Right. You don't want to have the manager saying, go up there and then you strike out.
That's right.
You're sitting down at the end of the bench there. That's no good.
Sending back the double A. This is not working. Thank you for coming on to this show. We appreciate it. And we'll be maintaining contact, I'm sure, as time goes on, building up the energy there. That's going to be good. Thank you for those who tuned into the live stream, but especially thank you to all of our podcast listeners, because quite frankly, I wouldn't have a podcast without you. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.